I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back.
We are about to have a conversation with Jeanine Cummins, who has written this incredible novel, The Outside Boy. And welcome to our studios. It's good
Thank
to have you.
You
with us.
Thank you for having me.
Lovely book.
Thank you.
Really, just incredible. We'll talk about this, the path to this book. But first of all, you're a local girl.
I am. Yes. I grew up mostly in Gaithersburg. I moved. My dad was in the Navy, so we were travelers ourselves when we were young. But we landed here when I was 5 or 6 years old, and I grew up in Gaithersburg most of my life. I went through public school in Montgomery County, and then went on to attend Towson University.
And this is your second book.
My second book, my first novel.
First novel.
Yes, my first book was a memoir about my family,
which I've read about but not read.
Okay,
sounds pretty intense.
Yeah, it was very intense, and you know, I was sort of surprised by the connection between writing the memoir and writing fiction.
Because this memoir you had was about the death of two people, a pretty horrific death of two people in your family, right?
Yeah, two of my cousins, God rest them, were raped and killed, and my brother was the only survivor of the crime. He's a Montgomery County firefighter. So it was really, that book, which is called A Rip in Heaven, was really the story of my brother's survival, and it was, I think, a real battle cry for victims' rights on behalf of my lost cousins and sort of a love letter to them. And you know, it was something that I felt really, obviously it was a very personal story. I felt really passionate about writing it. And when I was done, it was the hardest thing I've ever done, you know, including 27 hours of labor giving birth to my daughter. It was harder than that.
So this is number two?
So, yeah, this is my second child.
Number two.
Yeah.
Wait, say that because
expecting
Jeanine
again.
Is sitting across from me, 9 months pregnant.
Home, yeah.
4 weeks away from delivery.
Yes. Second book, second baby. So, but you know, when I started writing the novel, I sort of thought I was getting away from, you know, ripping open those emotional scars, and I wanted to do something with more anonymity. And then I got into writing it, and I realized fiction doesn't work that way. You're still writing about your psychology, no matter how you dress the characters up.
Because if you're a writer of her or his worth, like an actor of her or his worth, you get sucked into the characters and the place and the time, and you become part of it.
Right. Very much so.
So how did you end up picking up the idea of doing a story on the travelers, on the tinkers, of the gypsies of Ireland?
You know, it's funny. I actually have a piece out in the Huffington Post today that just went up.
I read it this morning.
You did?
My journey from memoirist to first-time novelist.
Right.
Right.
That addresses this very question, really, about how when I first started, when I first was looking for a subject to write about, I sort of went to the travelers because the Irish traveling community in Ireland as a subculture that is really quite foreign even to the Irish settled population. And I went to them because I really felt like I needed the comfort of that distance, that emotional distance. And I was looking for something with some emotional distance after the last book. And then I started writing about them, and, you know, that evaporated really quickly. But I think after writing the first book, I realized that I had to get out of the true story business, the strictly true story business. It was too painful for me.
Had that been the genre that you worked in the most since college and writing?
Was no,
the personal...
not really. I always wrote fiction, but it was my first book-length fiction, or it was my first book-length work was nonfiction, and it was a bestseller. And, you know, from a publisher's point of view, and I worked in publishing for 10 years before I became a full-time writer, it would have made sense for me to continue writing nonfiction. After you write one bestseller, you don't suddenly do something
Switch
different.
Genres.
You stick with what works.
Right.
But I just couldn't. I had to get out of it. But I knew that I always wanted to continue writing about injustice. And The Travelers then became a really natural choice for me because they're a community that 50, 60 years ago, before industrialization happened in Ireland, were vital to the economy of rural Ireland. And then industry happened, and machines and tractors and cars and modern technology came to Ireland and really obliterated the traveler's lifestyle, this way that they had been living for hundreds of years, and suddenly made them very marginalized. So since then, they've become a community that has been largely forgotten about, largely misrepresented, badly stereotyped in the mainstream culture there, and in some instances for good reason. They've turned to dodgier and dodgier ways to make a living as their economy crumbled in many instances. But I think I just wanted to show that, like any subculture, there was good and bad therein. And I felt that they were being really whitewashed and misrepresented. And I just, there is a lot of sociological study that exists about them, but there's very little fiction. Mm-hmm. And I just thought there was an opportunity there for someone to tell a story from a traveler's point of view.
And it was clear from the beginning of the book when you talk about what you read. I mean, you did a lot of, this is not just something came out of your head. You did tons of research about this.
Right. A lot of research. And I think that writing the memoir first helped me, prepared me a lot for that. In fact, maybe it prepared me too much because I became a little obsessive about the research. And I think sometimes I got stuck. My writing process would get stuck a little bit because I would be so focused on the research. But ultimately, I think it enriches the book. I read everything I could find about them, but I also went to Ireland and I met with travelers and I, visited them and spoke to them about their experiences at length. And that was the thing that I think really gave the book depth.
And you know Ireland. You spent time as a kid in Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, my family is American, but we have Irish background. I lived in Ireland, actually, after college for several years, myself in Belfast. My husband's from Mayo on the West Coast, so we still spend about 2 months a year there.
A West Coaster.
Yeah. It's a little different from the North, but I love Ireland. I'm very familiar with Ireland. I'm very comfortable with the vernacular. When I moved back from Belfast the first year or so, I sort of retained that Belfast twang for a while. My parents were like, "Who are you?" it was funny, but yeah, I think certain Irish dialects are extremely catchy, and Belfast is one of them.
It is. Yeah. And the Irish, I mean, just the lilt itself. I mean, I find myself when I'm reading your book, sitting outside and reading it with a cup of coffee, and I don't know what happened. When I started reading your book, I was reading it out loud.
Really?
As opposed to quick, because the accent kept coming into my head, so I kept reading it in.
That's great. I love to hear that.
In a brogue. It's just because you do capture it. You capture that sense, that place.
Thank you. That's the greatest compliment anyone could give me.
Really, it sucks you right into it in a good sense. And so what you chose to see this through the eyes of a young boy, Christy.
Yeah. Yes. I think that was a really important choice because...
Do you have a son?
I don't. I have a daughter. Uh-huh. And actually, when I first started writing this book, I was a new mother. And so I was sort of learning how to become a parent, and I was learning about the ferocity of that kind of love, that doesn't really exist outside the parent-child relationship in any way. And the themes in this book are largely about the parent and child relationship and the depth of that love and how far you will go for the child that you love.
Christina's dad.
Yeah. And I think, it's my editor once said to me that she thought it was really interesting that I chose to write the heroic father figure rather than the heroic mother. And I think I have a wonderful relationship with my dad, who's always been sort of a hero. My grandfathers were very important to me, both of them. And now I'm married to this wonderful man who is a remarkable father to his little girl. And it was really easy and natural for me to sort of translate the way I feel about my daughter into a more masculine point of view. And I think, sometimes fathers can make decisions that seem very maternal.
Oh, absolutely.
But in fact, there's retain all that masculinity. And that's what I wanted to show in the relationship between Christy and his father.
And Chris is also a very sensitive little boy. I mean, he's a boy.
Yeah.
He is a boy, but he's also a very sensitive kid, openly sensitive.
I think so, and that was accidental. And I think, he has his cousin Martin to sort of counterbalance him.
Right.
Because Martin is...
tough and roguish.
Yes. But Christy has a lot of my psychology. He really does. And he's a kid who reflects my own fears in a lot of ways and my own triumphs. And but, you know, I think, I hope, as you say, that he's still all boy. And I thought it was really important to write this story from a young person's point of view, because I think it's a lot easier to be sympathetic to a culture wherein you're examining it from a young person's point of view, where he's just learning and feeling his way. I thought that if I told it from the father's perspective or from an older person's perspective who's a little more set in his ways, and it might be more difficult to relate to the choices that the travelers make and their lifestyle.
And you said it in 1959.
Yes.
When the tinkers were still, the travelers were still there.
Yeah.
And a little boy who is kind of caught in the midst of the beginning of the end of a world.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And I think it's his search for identity that really drove the narrative for me. I'm American, but I come from an Irish and Puerto Rican family. I was born in Spain. We moved around an awful lot when I was a kid. At first, we were bilingual, and then we lost our Spanish when we moved to America. But I've struggled myself with issues of identity throughout my life at times. And, you know, Christy is very much a kid who feels caught between two cultures and sort of mildly rejected by both and isn't sure where he belongs in the world. And I think this sort of coming tide of the upheaval of his entire culture, which is really on the verge of extinction, and he's just beginning to sense that, you know, drives all of that home for him.
It's interesting. I was reading the blurbs in the back of your book, and there's a man I've interviewed many times whose work I really, really like, Sherman Alexie.
Oh, yeah.
A great author, also Native American, who understands the writing about cultures that are stuck between worlds.
Yes.
Being stuck between worlds.
Yes.
He saw that deeply in your book,
yeah,
obviously.
He did, and that was something that, you know, blew me away and made me very happy. I'm a huge fan of Sherman Alexie's, and he's a great writer and a great person. And I think, you know, there are lots of parallels between Native Americans and the Irish traveling culture. The travelers see themselves, they identify themselves as the indigenous population of Ireland. Now that's a statement that comes under some debate when you speak to Irish people, but it is possibly true. I mean, the origins of the traveling community are really, academically, they cannot be answered at this point. Nobody has really found a definitive answer about where they came from. There's all kinds of theories and rumors, but I think there are a lot of great parallels to them.
How related are they to the British travelers?
Not at all. Ethnologically, there's no link. The Irish travelers are Irish. They're not related to the Romani gypsies by blood. They're not related to any other European gypsy clans. They are 100% Irish Celtic people. So who knows? Maybe they are the indigenous population of Ireland.
Maybe they are. Maybe they are. And as a writer, I really enjoy you grab the culture of the travelers a lot. You give us their ways and their superstitions and their ways of burial and their ways of life and love and how they live. And you really do set a tone. You put us into a world, which I love. But I'm curious because, I mean, you can do that. I mean, writers can do that and do research and kind of pull it out. You can't always write it as well as you do, I think. But your passion for dialogue, where does that come from? How do you hear these characters when you write? How do you do that?
I don't know. It's a great question. I think I'm incredibly influenced by music, I think much more so than many writers. I think I'm more influenced by music than I am by the written word. All of my favorite musicians are really storytellers.
Like who?
Like Paul Simon and like Missy Higgins. To be really obvious, Bono. I'm really driven by musicians who are storytellers first. I love Damien Rice, all these kind of singer-songwriters who aren't just writing about you know, one experience, but sort of a more universal story. And I'm also a huge fan of books as well. But I think that the music of language and the music of Irish language has always been something that's really fascinated me. I think the fact that I was bilingual when I was really small, I'm not really anymore, but I think that gave me sort of a musical ear when I was young. And I come from a fairly musical family, and I think sort of the cadence and rhythm and poetry of language is what drives me to write. And I think the music of all of that is what I hope shows up in my writing. I definitely think that's where, that's what drives my dialogue anyway.
It's very interesting. I've never heard that put in that way by a writer before. Did you listen to a lot of their music?
The Travelers, I did. It's funny. I came up with a mix CD that I conceived as sort of a chronological soundtrack to the book.
Really?
That I gave as thank you gifts to the sales reps at Penguin who are selling the book, which is where I worked for 10 years. So these are my wonderful colleagues who are out there selling the book. And I think for me that was something that was, it was so personal because it really told the story of my journey as I was writing the book. But it was also music that I listened to an awful lot while I was writing. And it wasn't all Irish music. Much of it was Irish music. Some of it was Romani gypsy music. Some of it was contemporary music that just sort of spoke to a specific character or a certain scene in the book. Yael Naim is a great, I think she's French Israeli, singer-songwriter who has a beautiful song called Far, Far.
Yes.
That makes me, I think it is the encapsulation of Fionnuala Whippet, who's the little girl in the story, and her, the way she sort of, you know, falls in love with Christy and tries to pull him into her world a little bit, or try to pull him out of himself, really. And, you know, there's plenty of, Regina Spektor has a song on the CD that, you know, these contemporary writers that you don't think of as being, you know, writing traveling music, but they would speak to a certain space in the book that drove me to write certain scenes.
Have you made any kind of profound friendships among the travelers as you wrote this book?
You know, I'm sorry to say that none of them that I've really been able to maintain. There was one lady who I spoke to. Her name's Winnie Kerrigan, and she's a traveler who lives in Dunsink, right outside of Dublin, a halting site. And she was just such a remarkable lady, and she welcomed me into her home. She introduced me to all of her family. And she
was settled.
Most travelers are nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, she lives in a caravan still on a halting site, but they don't move around, which is fairly common these days. And she just was so open and so warm to me. And I think oftentimes travelers are a little bit suspicious, especially, you know, some sort of American writer comes sniffing around saying, oh, I want to write a novel about you. And they're like, what do you have to say about me and my culture? But she was incredibly open and warm and giving, and she shared so much with me. And several of the scenes that are in the book are actually stories of things that happened to her when she was a little girl traveling, when there was more of, when they were still living at least partially traditional lifestyle. They would go out traveling during the summer months. She told me a story about going into school, and, you know, it was the first time she had been in school with settled kids, and she was in class for a day or two, and she put her hand up to ask a question, and the teacher refused to acknowledge her. And at some stage, she called out, you know, I have a question. And the teacher said, I have nothing to say to you. If you have, you know, if you're not going to keep up with the class, you can draw until we're finished with the lesson. And the teacher gave her some crayons and some paper and wouldn't engage her. And she was this thirsty little mind. And I think that's happened a lot to traveling children. And so I turned that into a scene in the book. And there were several things that she told me but she was just a remarkable lady and, you know, not in any way bitter about her lot in life, and really warm and generous, and as I found many of the travelers to be.
Janine Cummins has written this incredible novel, The Outside Boy. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555.